Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Climate change is at a crisis point. Enormous forest fires are breaking out around the world. Catastrophic weather events are becoming the norm. Polar ice caps are melting at an alarming rate, and sea levels are constantly rising. So any changes that slow down carbon emissions are welcomed by everyone, right? Not necessarily. Nuclear power plants are closing and climate activists are cheering. Is anyone supporting the nuclear option, or is it considered too radioactive? Well, a new documentary called Atomic Hope, Inside the Pro-Nuclear Movement, just had its world premiere at the Hot Docs International Documentary Film Festival. It follows members of the wildly unpopular pro-nuclear movement as they challenge current beliefs and promote nuclear energy as a viable option to fossil fuels. And a diverse, cheeky, and quirky bunch these people are. The film is made by Ireland-based award-winning director, producer Frankie Fenton, and features nuclear advocates like Ida Riis-Halme, a widely published Finnish biomedical researcher, science communicator, and fiction writer based in Zurich, Switzerland. The documentary is showing again this Sunday. That's tomorrow, so you can still catch it. And I'm very pleased to have here with me on location at Hot Docs, Frankie and Ida, to tell us more about Atomic Hope. Hi, Frankie.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Hi, Ida.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming in person to see me.
Thanks so much for inviting us.
So, Ida, what's so good about nuclear energy?
Well, actually, it's what's so bad about our situation now is that climate change is threatening the kind of life we can offer our kids in the future. And it's also threatening a lot of vulnerable ecosystems and a lot of wonderful nature that I adore. And I'd love to know that my kids and my grandkids will live with that kind of natural world still on this planet. So, as a biologist, I love nature, and energy was not very close to my heart. But then I realized that the largest source of carbon emissions is the energy sector. And I needed to find solutions. I needed to have something to think that there's a path for the future. We can get there. We can decarbonize our entire economies and our entire grids. And it was very difficult to make sense of it at first because there are very conflicting reports in media. And if you're not an expert, it can sound like everything can be powered by 100% renewables, or everything can be solved by consuming less and having less energy. But all of these narratives, I found that it was hard to reconcile them, and it was also really hard for me to think about all the people, billions of the poor in the world, who don't have any energy now and who live in very poor conditions because of this. And the idea that we shouldn't be able to provide them with the kind of life that I want for my children just doesn't feel right. So I had to dig deeper and try to look at what do the most comprehensive reviews and scientific institutions say about the way forward. So when I went to a place like the International Energy Agency and IPCC, what I realized was that, surprisingly, they said that on top of everything else, efficiency, more renewables, we also need a lot more nuclear energy. And this was something that most of the people who were concerned about climate change were really shunning and didn't want to discuss at all. And I was really surprised by this divide. And I had to learn more, and I had to speak more about this. And I realized that nuclear power can actually provide vast amount of energy with very little land requirements, so taking up very little natural habitats where we can actually have forests and wonderful ecosystems thriving instead. And it uses the least amount of resources, so also less mining area and less mining pollution. And this is something that we can do, we can build, that can actually provide energy not just for my kids but for their grandkids, because nuclear power plants have such a long lifetime. They can even be there for 100 years. So it was something that I can do for the future generations as well.
So you would, in your ideal world, in the future, the whole world would be electrified, and the electrical source would be mainly nuclear?
Well, in order to have a lot better, lot less burden on the natural world, to use less resources, we need more recycling, for instance, and this needs vastly more electricity to process everything and to reuse it. So actually, to be more environmentally friendly, we need more energy, and that has to be carbon-free energy. So yes, we need more energy to be more environmentally friendly.
Frankie.
Hi.
This is not a popular group of people. Many people don't like what they're saying. It goes against their ideas of confronting climate change. How did you come into this group, and why did you choose to make your film about this?
I think you're kind of right. And from a very traditional environmental point of view, these guys might be seen as unpopular. I'm not so sure about if younger people think that way, actually, when it comes to these kinds of solutions. But for me, meeting these people, what happened very naturally, it kind of evolved over time. I started all this journey just by reading an article in Wired magazine in 2009. It talked about the merits of this different type of nuclear energy called thorium, and it seemed to answer a few of the problems that I would have had with it: the safety, the waste, the proliferation, etc. Some of those things were true, some of them not so true, but it kind of got me the bug, and I got in touch with all the people who were mentioned in that article, and as time went on, it just kind of evolved, I suppose, and I suddenly stopped making a film about the actual technology itself and the types of reactors, and instead started focusing on the people who were communicating this message, this emerging group of activists who were strongly believed that we needed to readdress our thoughts on nuclear power.
Many of them came to Hot Docs with you from different parts of the world, including Japan, Switzerland, the United States, and other countries. Were you the one who, was your film what brought them together, or did you just come across this group who all knew each other already?
No, they didn't. Actually, some of the people are just meeting the other people in the film for the first time right here in Hot Docs. Certainly, they are an emerging group. They are a small group and in a small community. I think a lot of them have heard of one another over social media and that kind of thing. But I think the world is a shrinking place these days anyway. It doesn't really necessarily mean that you can avoid people who are in your realm, whether you're into comic books or whether you're into nuclear power.
There was a large anti-nuclear movement, and not anti-nuclear energy, but Ban the Bomb movement in the 60s, and this was totally separate from the energy thing, but now many people conflate the two. However, in Canada, we have an example where they did intersect. The CANDU reactor was developed in the 50s and 60s as a efficient, clean nuclear alternative, a power plant. There's actually the Darlington plant is just outside of Toronto, which is a CANDU reactor, and out of the goodness of its heart, the government of Canada gave a CANDU reactor to India, which then went on to take the plutonium, which is produced by the CANDU reactor, and used it to make an atom bomb. So who's to say nuclear power doesn't lead to a proliferation of atomic weapons?
The proliferation of atomic weapons has already happened. We have more atomic weapons than we need to pulverize the whole planet. The problem is that those weapons exist, and we hope that nobody will use them, and we want to get rid of them. In fact, nuclear weapons came before nuclear energy. You can get them without using any nuclear energy technology. And if we were to, say, take all nuclear power generation away from the world, we still wouldn't have solved the nuclear weapons conundrum. And in fact, one of the ways that we can start solving them, which there's a great example of the US-Russia program Megatons to Megawatts, where you had over 20 years, you got rid of 20,000 warheads worth of radioactive material and produced electricity. Up to 10% of US electricity came from nuclear weapons. So this is one way of actually addressing the problem of nuclear weapons for me.
Interesting. So weapons, was it swords into plowshares, or what is it? the old expression.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the same time, people look at accidents like Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and the Fukushima Daiichi disaster. And when we, and although there haven't been that many, there are enough that people are very frightened. And shouldn't we be afraid of nuclear disasters on nuclear power plants, especially ones built in seismic areas where there are tsunamis and earthquakes, such as in Japan?
Yeah, I think all great large industrial projects that have a hazard should be sensibly located, so you have to take into account where to build them. For nuclear power plants, you need a very small area of space to build them. So it's always possible to find enough of that safe space where you can build them. And the thing is that people are very afraid of those three accidents, nuclear accidents that happened. And actually, only one of them has ever taken human lives, the Chernobyl accident. And what I realized when I started looking at them was that somebody asked me, like, what about other energy accidents? And I realized that I didn't even know about other energy accidents. It was not in the map.
Exxon Valdez and
Bhopal.
Yeah, Bhopal. That was more of a chemical accident.
And Bhopal then, was a chemical accident. Yeah, exactly.
And then, but the oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico.
Oil spills. A couple of oil spills have come. Those are not very hazardous to humans. Those are more environmental disasters.
Yes.
But then I realized that actually coal power and hydropower have had way larger accidents than nuclear ever. I started looking at them, and there have been thousands of people who have died from these, much more than from nuclear accidents ever.
From hydropower?
Hydropower is one of the biggest ever. So in China, there's the Banqiao Dam, because when dams burst, you know the power in water, it killed hundreds of thousands of people. Oh. It was actually hidden for a long time, and it was only made public 30 years after the fact because the Chinese, back in the 1970s, didn't want to make it known.
So you're saying more people have died from hydropower accidents than from nuclear accidents?
By way larger margin.
Okay, I've never heard that statistic before. That's an interesting one.
Oh, I have made an article because I was so astonished about this. So I have compared how deadly are energy accidents, which are the deadliest. And I realized that over our history, there have been both coal mine accidents and gas explosions that have displaced more people, made more people homeless, and killed more people than the Chernobyl accident.
But be that as it may, you mentioned you have two daughters.
Yes.
And when there's a nuclear accident, it's the youngest people who have the harshest effects. Adults aren't as affected by exposure as small children are, who are more likely to die young from the effects of a nuclear spill.
So nobody has died from a nuclear spill in Fukushima, which is the modern type of nuclear.
But Chernobyl.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a type of a reactor we don't no longer have. And in Chernobyl, you also had a huge problem with the authorities that hid the complete fact. But you don't have that type of reactor anymore. It's basically you can't have that accident come again because you don't have that model running. And I'm least afraid of nuclear accidents because what my children are exposed to every day, what kills thousands every day, is air pollution that you can't stop. You can't take iodine tablets to protect my children from it. They have to breathe. They have to breathe every day, every second. And nobody is stopping the air pollution that kills 7 million huge amounts of people every year. And this happens when everything goes as it's supposed to go.
Okay, and yet, when, for example, in the last 2 years, we had the COVID, where all of a sudden, areas that were highly polluted, the pollution seemed to clear up, the air pollution, because the factories were closed, people weren't driving around. But nuclear power, if there's a problem with it, it doesn't last a year or two. It lasts a very, very, very long time. The half-life is thousands of years. And who's to say what we think of as safe now will still be safe in 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 years? Do you have an opinion on that, Frankie?
Well, yeah, sure. Well, first of all, I'm not an expert on any of this. I am a filmmaker. I'm pointing the camera at the experts. But I can kind of say from my point of view, listen, there's a lot of things you shouldn't lick in this world. And some of those things are underneath your kitchen sink. And, you know, some of the, you know, there is many, many arguments thrown at the pro-nuclear activists. This is one of them. And I think, generally speaking, what they're talking about is actually the waste is one of their favorite things, because not only is the waste contained and they know where it is, it's also very, very small. Actually, I think per volume, it's if you put, say, a can of Coke's worth of energy in, you get a can of Coke's worth of waste out. It's exactly one for one. So one of the issues is it lasts for a very long time, but we know how we can put it away in a safe, you know, we can bury it and we can look after it. But honestly, there's so many environmental problems around the world that the nuclear waste one is something that just doesn't concern me. I'm far more concerned about number one, air pollution, but number two, just the general waste that we have coming from landfills and, you know, giant islands of plastic in the ocean.
Heavy metals.
So finally, what would you want people who are opposed to nuclear power to think about, briefly?
I would love them to realize that we really have to be responsible and not only react with thinking that we already know it's too dangerous. That's the dangerous attitude. That's the real danger. We have to be responsible, take a step back, and be open to reviewing the facts, reviewing the best possible evidence in order to choose the option that is the least risk and that gives most hope for the future. I want people to be open-minded.
Well, lots of food for thought here. Thanks so much for talking with me, Frankie Fenton and Ida Rusalma.
Thanks so much for having us.
Cheers. Great to be here.
Their new documentary, Atomic Hope, is playing tomorrow at Hot Docs. You might want to check that out. And can be streamed right now across Canada through hotdocs.ca. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.